Welcome to the Luxury Home Insider. We're honored to welcome Jamie Zhu to the podcast. Jamie has blitzed social media over the past 10 years, amassing over 10 million followers across Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Jamie started off filming prank videos for 8 years and recently pivoted into documentary content. Jamie now runs a social media agency where he helps clients grow their brands across socials. Coming to us today, all the way from Shanghai, Jamie has kindly offered his time to share with us his insights on social media, the luxury property market in Australia, and also a dive into what makes Jamie tick. So without further ado, welcome, Jamie.
Thank you, Brendan. Nice to be here, bro.
You too. Thank you so much. So let's jump straight into it. One thing that I mentioned in the intro was that you started off doing prank videos and then you pivoted to documentary style. Why did you make the change?
Good question. I was doing prank videos for, you know, a long time. I started my social media journey with them. And at the time, this was when, you know, back in the 2014 days, pranks were real. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of just something that I enjoyed doing. You know, they were, for the most part, very lighthearted. And yeah, I was able to gather some success after 2 years of doing them. And then along that journey, I guess, as you go through your 20s, like I have, and into your 30s, you kind of start maturing a little bit. So mm-hmm. I went from sort of doing like these prank videos to then doing some family stuff with my dad and my other people in my family, to then doing some music, to then doing some vlogs, and then ending up kind of where I am now, which is, yeah, as you said, documentary style content. I think, you know, when I turned kind of 28, 29, I was like, you know what, like it's time for a change. And mm-hmm. Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. And what really caught the attention of Luxury Home Insider was your tours around Australia, visiting our most expensive streets. And what specifically drew you to that sort of format?
Yeah, the first thing I did was I went to Australia's most expensive street, Worsley Road. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of just out of my own curiosity, trying to understand how these people got to where they are, you know, living in houses ranging from 50 million to 100 million plus. Like, what do these people do for a living or for their job, or what inheritance have they amassed to be able to afford living there? So my cameraman and I just went there one day, and it just so happened to be that we actually interviewed Ray White himself without me even knowing.
Brian,
so that
White
video is up on TikTok.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
sorry, Brian White.
Brian, yeah, I've seen that one. And his house was famously featured in $1 million listing Sydney, and where Gavin visits the, you know, the boss's house to find out his fate with the brand, and if you may recall.
Yes, no, I watched like every single episode of Lux Listings religiously, so yeah, I do remember that scene.
Yeah,
I went outside the house, it was really cool, continued along my way and met some other interesting people. So that was kind of the first step into this sort of style, you could call it. And then we
it's
kind of expanded into long forms.
It's a bit of a pink house from memory, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pink. It doesn't look too modern. It's kind of like maroni pink, you could call it.
Yeah. And with a lot of quirky type of architecture and artwork and so forth.
Yeah, correct. I mean, when you drive down Worsley Road, it doesn't look as extravagant as you think it would. You know, you see like houses or streets in the US, and they're generally like quite big and modern and mansion-like. But in Worsley Road, it's kind of like, you know the name, but the houses are more low-key slash hidden. You don't really see the value of it from the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you went there with your cameraman, and Brian just invited you in and said, come have a look around.
Brian didn't invite us in. he just answered a couple of questions
on
the street.
Yep.
I think I might have asked if I can come inside, but he said no. Okay. I do recall him saying... it will shock you to even like fathom how much his house cost. So yeah, he was a nice guy, because the whole day we just got rejected nonstop. But
right,
there were a select few people actually that were kind enough to answer our questions, and he was one of them.
Amazing, amazing. What was something that you learned from meeting these high net worth individuals all around the country? What's something that stood out from you that you really sort of took away as a lesson for you?
It sounds cliche, but it's just the same formula every single time. It's just relentless hard work, dedication, and drive. That's all it is. And consistency. I mean, you hear it all the time. It's like, I remember I was at the gym a couple of months ago after having trained very consistently for about the last 2 years. And my friend, I have two friends at the gym. And one friend came up to my other friend and goes, "Oh man, Jamie's looking good. Like, what's his secret?" My mate goes, "Bro, like, the magic pill was just hard work and consistency." And the truth is, I think in everything in life, people try and get that magic pill to achieve the results fast, but failing to realize in this, generation of 1.5 second attention spans that things still do take time, regardless of what they are. So, yeah, man, that's sort of just the biggest takeaway I saw. And also, the value they put on things is completely different to the value of someone normal. And what I mean by that is, if you put two amounts of money next to each other, one's $2, the other's $20,000, and then you put two people in the same room, one of them is going to value the $2 like it's $20,000, the other's going to value the $20,000 like it's $2. So when you kind of understand how people's brains think differently, where someone earning $1 million a month is normal or even below normal, then that's when that threshold completely increases. And that's something I've really, really understood around these people.
There's no real ceiling to it. They just see that there's this endless abundance available to them rather than kind of really limiting their beliefs, perhaps.
Yeah, it's like the norm for most people would be, okay, I'm gonna go on a holiday, let's try find the cheapest hotel. And I'm gonna work towards that. So say the hotel costs them $1,000 a week. The other person with this more abundance mindset will say, okay, my normal is spending, I don't know, 20K on a hotel for a week. So I need to get there and make sure I have enough to facilitate that. So it's all about the perspectives that these people have and about how they value themselves, their skill sets they've acquired, and just life as a whole.
Awesome. Awesome. So after touring around Australia, visiting our most expensive streets, what was your favorite neighborhood in your opinion?
Ooh, yeah, good question. So we went to every single capital city's in most expensive street, including Canberra, which I don't think I've posted yet. So out of Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Hobart, Adelaide, Perth, Darwin, Brisbane, Gold Coast, I'll give you my least favorite. My least favorite was Darwin. Darwin was like really weird, actually. It was in a place called Sandy Bay. And the road was really like, it was quite a public, like a main road. I think there were buses going through, and you just saw some like, houses that were big in size, but more so like there were other houses that were just like flat out tents and just like bogans living there. So it was, but the thing is, I just went on like what Google search says. So I didn't really investigate it to the T in terms of like, whatever like other opinions were. It was just what Google said. Okay, this is the most expensive house, most
Oh, I
expensive house in
see.
this.
Okay.
So I did a quick Google search and I was like, done, we're going there. But if I had to answer your question, I would have to say it would be probably Melbourne. Probably Melbourne. Yeah.
Awesome. And would you live there? Would that be somewhere that you could see yourself aspiring to live to one, live in one day?
In Melbourne or in Melbourne's most expensive street?
In Melbourne's most expensive street.
Oh yeah, I mean sure, I'd love to. It was a street called Lansdale Road, Toorak, but there's also another street called St. George's Road. Yeah, of course. I mean, I've lived in Melbourne for 3 years before anyway. So I just kind of like when you compare like Toorak to Point Piper, for example, it's very they're extremely different. And I like the more like European kind of like classical style with the green grass and the houses not being so gigantic but more low rise. That's just kind of my preference.
And that actually leads to the next question. So you're right into that sort of more European style than say that contemporary. So I know you went to the Gold Coast and you went to Sovereign Island, and that is obviously uber modern, completely different to say Toorak. So that European style is more your style.
I would say so, you kind of like as a kid, you're like, wow, modern's so cool. And you can still be modern but have like coziness to it. I went to a man, his name's Nick Bell. He's a very wealthy individual from Melbourne, and he lives in, I won't disclose where he lives, but he lives in a really nice neighborhood. And his house was once, I believe, one story with an underground, land size, not too big, but the most incredible house I've seen in my life because of how it was compact. It wasn't too gigantic, but it was impersonal. It had the exact colors, like the energy, like the homeliness plantation. Everything was 10 out of 10. So I would have to say his house has been the best house I've probably ever been to.
After touring around Australia, meeting all these people, doing all the work that you do through the lens as you see it, what would be your take on the luxury property market at the moment?
In Australia, like highly valuable, especially Sydney and Melbourne. I think when you kind of understand the capital growth that some places get, I remember going to a house in Canberra only a few weeks ago, actually. And I think this was like a proper mansion in a place called Red Hill. And this house, I believe, was sold in 1991 for like 2 mil. And I couldn't begin to imagine how much it'd be worth now. Even the value, of my mum's place. She lives in an area of Sydney which is now very expensive. Not a luxury place, but her place has gone up by like a mil in the last 20 years. The luxury market is super interesting, because especially in places like Sydney, you get, nine digit properties here and there. The most expensive in Melbourne, I believe, was sold for about 85 mil. But yeah, I think it's obviously if you can afford it, it's a great area of investment. And I believe that the Australian market's only, going to grow long term. I think it's a very lucrative part of the world to buy. And I personally I haven't got any property myself as of yet, but I'm planning on doing so this year. Now that I really understand it a lot more. And yeah, it's really interesting. I think shows like Lux Listings, even what I produce on TikTok and long form on YouTube about the property market, kind of like, it's like a platform to get people excited about the potentials and the possibilities. So if you really look into it, there's a lot of great luxury houses on the market now.
Yeah, fantastic. I look, definitely agree with you. I think the luxury property market is amazing, particularly in Australia, because it's such a wonderful country. I think there's a lot of international appeal in Australia, and I think it just seems, even though the last year we've had all these interest rate rises, the luxury property market has just gone from strength to strength right across the country. That's why I was really interested on get your thoughts, sort of meeting people around the place. So I've got a couple of social
And
questions for you. Sorry, no, go on.
just on the topic of interest rates, yeah, I obviously know what's been happening, and my rent went up by a significant amount as well. And I think someone I know that said their rates went up by, I think, 13 times or something in the last year. And I guess you have two ways of looking at it. It's like, oh, obviously I understand for some families and individuals it could be hard. They might have to downsize. But at the same time, it's once again about that abundance mindset. It's like the threshold is here now, and you have to rise to the occasion. I think that if you have that mindset, regardless of what happens with the interest rates, you're going to be on top of things because you'll look for new opportunities that will facilitate, that higher premium that you're going to have to pay in this day and age. So that's the way I look at things. I'm not getting all upset about my rent going up by heaps. I'm just being like, all right, I need to do more, or I need to leverage more. So, piece of advice for people out there.
Yeah, it's interesting take you have on it, mate. I know there's a lot of talk about there's a lot of negative talk about rents going up, interest rates, but I tend to lean on your side too. Obviously, I'm a real estate agent, and I've felt that our rents and our property values have been undervalued for a really long time, particularly up here in Queensland. We've had a bit of an upwards correction during COVID, and I think there is a new benchmark. Now I don't see those trends heading south again, and I also feel that there's a lot of people out there perhaps did have some room in their life to make a change, and now's the opportunity where they need to make that. So I definitely agree with you on that. And I've got a couple of social questions for you. I'm really interested about to know when you're producing your content. You mentioned you've got a cameraman. So you don't use smartphone, you have a cameraman with a digital camera and a mic. And what sort of format do you use when you're creating your content and you're recording your videos?
Yeah, so pretty simple. I'm basically across YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. Those are my main. And when we're filming long form videos, which go on YouTube and Facebook, we do film with a camera, like a proper professional camera with, mics. But then when we're doing stuff for TikTok, so stuff like the most expensive street, we use an iPhone with a mic.
Okay. Cool. And when you
And
go,
the reason is because you want to be like compatible to the viewer. You want to see where the customer's coming from. If you've got, an hour to spare, you're gonna go on YouTube to watch something a bit longer. So you want to cater to that market. Whereas if you're catering to a consumer that's only got like a few seconds on their lunch break or a few minutes, then you want to make things quick and fast and easy to understand, and also raw, like TikTok kind of producers as a whole, because people go on TikTok wanting to watch low production content and things that are more real and realistic without that third wall there. So yeah, we just got to cater to whatever the viewer is.
Yeah, they can sort of sense that high production value and they want to make it sort of align with the platform. And I noticed that, like, for example, you mentioned about your most expensive streets. You're doing some of that on content, on TikTok. You're doing some of that on YouTube as well. So are you running two cameras? Are you just taking snippets out of the YouTube video to make the TikTok's video? How do you sort of go about that?
Honestly, say we were going to do like a video about, Sydney's most expensive area. What we would do generally is we would film the entire YouTube video on a camera first. So we'd spend like a whole day just doing that. And then at the very end, we would be like, all right, that's done. So now let's whip out the iPhone and just do the most expensive street, which doesn't take us too long anyway. So,
I
I mean, you
see.
could say not very efficient, but we like to focus on one thing at a time. And I think, there are some kind of like camera equipment where you can have a phone on top of the camera. We haven't mastered that yet, but we don't want to. Yeah, we'd rather just produce native content, if I'm honest.
Yeah. And so to make a little video like that, 13, 14, 15 minutes, you're devoting the whole day to produce that.
It depends how lucky we get. I'll give you an example, like in Sydney. We went to we did a video called "I Went to Sydney's Most Expensive Area." So we went to Bellevue Hill, Dover Heights, Vaucluse, all those sorts of areas, and it was just me door knocking to see if someone wanted to answer and show me around. That particular video took an entire day because everyone kept saying no, and that's Sydney for you. Everyone in Sydney's more closed off to that sort of thing. But then when we went to Adelaide, which I believe, having been around the country, is Australia's by far the most friendly city in the country.
Really? Okay.
That took us, yeah, by a mile. That took us like 2 hours because everyone was just willing to say yes and answer our questions. So it really
Everyone is more
depends.
welcoming.
Correct.
Yeah, wow. So, what advice would you give to any other aspiring people out there looking to make a career out of socials?
I think a couple of things. The first thing is the obvious, which is choose a niche to start off with. I think people get too caught up with a mindset of almost being selfish to an extent where, say, I'm starting out social media, I have the self-righteousness to think that everyone's going to care about my content. Whereas I need to understand that I need to give people a reason to care about my content. So you can't always go from the stance of, oh, well, I want to do this, I'm going to do it. Like, there has to be some little detail in terms of, like, has this been proven to work? I'm not saying something new can't work, but I'm saying, we're in 2024 now. Most things have been done. So you can kind of, without having to reinvent the wheel, look at what's worked
Do some
and,
research.
do some research and, use someone else's idea, but make it your own, if that makes sense. That's the first thing.
Well, potentially those people have tried, practiced, failed, made those mistakes. And like in business, I suppose taking away those lessons can be important.
Yeah, of course, but that brings me to my second point, good segue, is that even if you have been trying for say 1 to 2 years, say on a platform like TikTok, you have to understand that even for me early on in 2013, 2014, when I started, I got nowhere for 2 years. So You have to see it as a long-term game. You really do have to put in the hard yards and consistency. You can't just think to yourself, I'm going to try it out for 1 or 2 months. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Like, nothing in life comes simple. You really have to put in the miles and the dedication and sacrifice to make it work if you want to. And along the way, you're going to test different styles of content out, you know, different ideas, topics, editing styles, and you'll find something that works, but you have to stick it out. And I think the third piece of advice I would give, which is probably the most important and the people really don't know about in this day and age, is that if you want to experience longevity in social media, you have to get on long form and you have to have a strategy for long form as well. And I'll tell you why. It's because, for example, I've been around for 10 years now. I've been making content, you know, full time for about 8 of those 10 years or 7, but I've lasted a long time. Why have I lasted? It's because I've migrated almost, well, not migrated, but I've also expanded into long form as well as short form. And the reason why long form is so important is because
you, just for those listening, YouTube, you're talking about YouTube specifically.
YouTube specifically, yes. And the reason long form is really important is because as people, we're invested into other people, but only to certain degrees. So if you have two people standing next to each other, you've got one person that has 10 million followers on TikTok. You have another person that has 10 million followers on YouTube. The YouTuber is going to have such a high, I don't even know what percentage, 300, 400, 500% increase in subscriber loyalty than the other person, simply because if they both post one video a week each, the TikToker is going to be posting one 15-second video per week, which means their audience will see them 15 seconds a week, versus the YouTuber, they'll be posting one video for 15 minutes long. So when you compare that and you compare how we as humans are inclined to resonate with others, it's through duration of time. Think about, you know, that friend that you see at a social gathering once every 5 years once versus a friend you hang out with every single week. And it's the same thing. So long form is important for that reason. Secondly, on top of long form, you have to always pivot at the right times. So what I mean by that is you could start making videos that are just like what I've done. You know, I started making prank videos and I had to pivot to vlogs and I had to pivot to music and I had to pivot to real estate. You know, you got to keep turning the dial when the time comes, because your audience, and this ties back into my first point, people think that, oh, people should care about me. But even as much as they do care about you, like I was, you could say I was at my peak back in 2019 with all my family stuff. They got bored of that as well. So when they get bored, you've got to also turn the dial and give them something new.
Yeah, wow. Great advice. And someone, just as you're telling me that, someone that jumps to mind is Spanion. You've obviously, I'm assuming you've seen Spanion. He very much, I think all those elements that you mentioned around that process, I think there's certainly your success and other people have followed that similar model to reach their success as well. And I'm curious, is there someone that you follow at the moment that you find entertaining? I really like a guy that's in the UK at the moment, Tom Burchie. I don't know if you've seen him on TikTok. He's someone I sort of check out every day. I find him really funny. Is there some content creator that you find funny that you tune into and check in on every day or regularly?
You know what? Honestly, like what I do is I have people that I'm subscribed to, say on YouTube or TikTok, and I just keep myself in the loop of what they're doing. There's no one particularly you could say that I really look to try and emulate. Spanion is definitely a really good content creator. He's only come on the scene recently. And I think what he has is he obviously has a good team behind him, but he's got that personality that you're drawn to as well. And I think a lot of people look in the mirror and you really have to ask yourself, like, do I have that kind of personality or that captivating persona, or do I not? And then you create content accordingly. I think with him, it's like he can sort of do anything and people will watch, including myself. Like I found myself watching him walking around the airport for half an hour for no reason.
That recent video.
But for most people, like no chance that they'll be able to do that, you know? So look, I think he is definitely one I definitely keep on top of the Aussies, that's for sure. Some guys in the US, Yeah, I think people that sort of create similar style of content to me, and then just people I like to watch for entertainment only. So I can't really name anyone, but like yeah, a lot.
Yeah, cool. Is so what's on the horizon for you for 2024? What are you do you happy to share any goals that you have, or is there any particular projects you're working towards, any ambitions for you for the new year?
Yeah, definitely. I think that I always get asked by a lot of people, including sort of like high level businessmen and entrepreneurs and people running companies, how do they grow their social media? And I've really, due to the demand, started to really look into helping people. So one thing for 2024 is we'll be taking on a lot of a couple of clients to
Great.
really mentor through that journey from TikTok to long form to YouTube, and just kind of using my own experience and expertise that I've gathered for the last 10 years to do so. Alongside that, also just really knuckling down on the documentary content. There's so many topics that we want to explore, including overseas. I'm going to be in Saudi Arabia this weekend for about a week. So that's going to
Awesome.
be really cool.
Any real estate stuff in Saudi Arabia?
Yes, potentially. Potentially,
Awesome.
yeah. And yeah, man, just really just being on top of it. But definitely you could say, yeah, the main focus will be international, and also, yeah, helping others grow their social media.
Awesome. Awesome. So, in the real estate industry, real estate agents often will have coaches and mentors that we subscribe to that we have sort of help and guide us. Do you have a coach or a mentor that's helped you sort of evolve and adapt? As you mentioned, you've been pivoting, you sort of followed this process. Has anyone sort of helped you through that process?
Yes, absolutely. I've got a team in Melbourne that help me with my YouTube specifically. So they're my mentors because I believe that, you know, no matter how good someone is, we can always learn more. So I never think I know everything. I'm always learning from people better than me in the space. So yes, I think it's very important. You know, even my personal trainer has a coach, and I think when you start understanding that there's no real ceiling, you can always improve, then that's a good place to be in. So yeah, in short, yes, I do have a mentor.
Amazing, amazing. And obviously, you're providing that mentoring to people that want to and businesses that want to improve their socials and their audiences as well. So that's amazing. So this moves to close to our end, mate. We're going to wrap things up where we just ask you some stuff about your favorites. So it's quick. You don't haven't really got an answer. We can move on. That's fine. Just let us know and we can blast through this pretty quickly. So, first off, favorite movie.
Oh, you know what? I don't really watch movies. I'm gonna be real with you.
A
Whenever I've
style
said this to
thriller,
like,
action, comedy.
I love romantic movies. That's my
Wow, that's surprising. Favorite food.
thing. Japanese food.
Me too. Favorite holiday destination.
Spain.
Spain. What does a typical day look like for you?
Wake up at 5, pray, shower, make the bed, cook, go to the gym, Bible studies, Chinese class, work, film. Yeah.
Big day. If there was any inspirational person you can have dinner with, dead or alive, who would it be?
Probably Cristiano Ronaldo.
Okay. Biggest regret?
No regrets.
Most thankful for?
My family and my team.
Awesome. And if you were Prime Minister of Australia for the day, what's one thing you'd change?
I would bring back a lot of traditional values.
Interesting. I like it. Jamie, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. How would the audience get in contact with you, particularly those people that want to engage your services to help them build their socials, grow their audiences in 2024? What's the best way to reach out to you?
Best way would just to be DM me on Instagram. I do read all my messages. So my Instagram is just Jamie Zhu. And yeah, send me a message if you're interested in doing stuff. We do work with real estate agents as well. So yeah, that's the best way.
And so you've got availability for new clients, I expect.
We do, yes, but it's limited.
Amazing. Well, I do really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. And for those listening, I think Jamie has some wonderful wisdom to share. You've got a little bit of a taste to that today, but I'd really encourage you to reach out to him if you're wanting to build your social media and take your business or your brand to the next level in 2024.